It's the Bill Myers Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
770-5633. If you want to talk with Eric Peters, Eric Peters, automotive journalist at EP Autos, because it's Wheels Up Wednesday. Whee! Eric, how you doing this morning?
Well, I'm good, and I'm in a good mood. I have some good news for you, because I know that you're a VW guy like I am.
Yep.
And there is a very credible rumor that Volkswagen is going to bring back some kind of a small to medium-sized pickup circa 2029. That's the good news. The bad news is it might be electric, and I hope I'm wrong about that.
Oh, no. So, in other words, they have all those ID Buzz. Remember, they brought back the Volkswagen bus with, they call it the ID Buzz, though, right? They probably have a bunch of ID Buzz batteries sitting on the parts bin. What can we do with these, right? Nobody was buying those things, apparently.
Well, yeah, gosh, I hope they're not that dumb. And, you know, that blinkered by their ideology and this obsession with electrifying everything. Yeah, the article that I wrote talked about, and you'll be very familiar with this, the little rabbit-based pickup that Volkswagen offered back in the early 80s. And, you know, again, this was based on the Rabbit. So a little car, but it had a 6-foot bed, very practical. And they offered it with a diesel engine. And the thing got like 54 miles per gallon.
Oh, it was amazingly slow. It was amazingly slow, just like my Vanagon diesel, you know, same sort of thing. But on the other hand, very economical. Like I said, 50 miles a gallon. And you could do most of what most people in the suburbs, in the cities, and even just light rural areas would want in a pickup truck. It was perfect. Really was.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, granted, you know, the early 80s version was kind of primitive and, as you say, kind of slow. But imagine if they took something such as the recent generation Jetta platform that was available with the TDI all the way through 2015 or 2016 and turned that into a pickup, you know, 50 plus miles per gallon, but with the ability to get to 60 in 8 seconds rather than 20.
Oh, man. It would sell like crazy.
All the modern amenities and everything that you want. And imagine that for, say, $27,000 or so.
It would sell like crazy. Even if it was $30,000, I think it would sell like crazy there. And people would be hungry for something like that. This is something that, all the American companies, I think, have more or less let go of for the most part. Because Ford used to have the Ranger. Right.
Sure.
Do they still sell the Ranger? I don't know.
They sell the Ranger, but it's now, you know, it's what they call it's a mid-sized, basically full-size truck by the standards of the early 2000s.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is really, really big. And what the market is really hungering for is, mom and dad want to be able to grab a bunch of mulch over at Hilton Landscape or something and get it home. You know, that kind of stuff.
Sure. You know, and think about, I mean, this particular instance, Volkswagen, what does that stand for? What does that translate into?
People's car, yeah. Now,
the whole point of Volkswagen was that it was a mass market car for regular people like us, you know, and for years now, it's been trying to sort of edge into being kind of another Audi, a higher end brand that sells more expensive vehicles to affluent people. But there's only so many affluent people. This is like an inherent contradiction. I think they should just change the name if they're going to continue to go down this road, because a $50,000 people's car is like the most bizarre non sequitur I can think of.
Well, it's only for the upper income people's car, you know, that kind of thing.
I guess my German's a little rusty. I need to figure out how to put that into an acronym. I'll do that after the show.
Okay. So it would be interesting if they came back with a Volkswagen truck. What was that term they had? Farfignugen or something?
Farfignugen. Yeah. Which was, you know, it was a marketing slogan that they used to pitch cars like the original GTI, but not just the original GTI. All of their cars had some pep and verve, and they were fun.
Yep.
You know, they had a sense of humor. If you look back at the ads that Volkswagen used to have back in the 70s for the Beetle and the GTI and all the other cars, it was always tongue-in-cheek, you know, a playful and fun. What happened to that?
Yeah, well, they got serious, and they also almost got sued out of existence for the diesels. Yeah. By the way, is it illegal for Volkswagen to make a diesel at this point? What, as part of that settlement? I've kind of forgotten what sort of the thing.
It's not, but they essentially pulled out of the U.S. market because of the reputational damage that was done. Very difficult to sell in this market now. And, you know, the other thing is just the compliance cost. You know, it's not just Volkswagen. The other manufacturers that used to offer diesel engines in passenger cars, including General Motors, used to be able to get a diesel in the Cruze, for example. They've pulled out because it's just not worth it. You know, in order to make the thing compliant, it winds up being so expensive that it's not competitive any longer with the gas engine equivalent.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see if this comes out. And as long as they don't make it electric, I think it would be just fine. It just needs to be something economical and affordable. And unfortunately, in this country, if you're making the, it seems like the only people who can make a cheap electric at this point is China, because China, sure, of course, it has the rare earths. China has most of the battery technology and capacity in the world. That's just the way it is right now at this point.
Well, also, the Chinese literally heavily subsidize the entirety of the thing, the whole ecosystem. It's not just the manufacturing. They have subsidized the expansion of their electrical grid to be able to provide the necessary electricity for these vehicles. And that's fine if you want to live in this sort of corporatist type of system where the state decides what you're going to have. And, that's it. I don't want to live in a system like that.
Eric Peters with me this morning. Always happy to take your calls. 770-KMED. Let's grab one right now. I don't know who it is, but let's see. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Mr. Scott, how you doing? Professional driver, you're a Mercedes guy. We're talking Volkswagen right now, though. Morning.
Oh, well, this is good. Yeah. I drive one of those. And anyway, I just wanted to say that I really think that we need a Mercedes-Benz pickup. What about Mercedes-Benz pickup? Turning these Sprinters into pickups, man, SUVs. What do you think?
Boy, that's something I hadn't thought about. Well, that, Eric.
A number of luxury, that's been tried. Do you remember when Lincoln came out with the Blackwood?
Right, yeah.
It didn't sell. It just turns out that the people in that demographic who buy high-end luxury cars don't seem to be that interested in pickups. At least that's my impression, and that hasn't been done.
Three layers drilling in to put a fire extinguisher in a race car. The pickups, the Sprinters are built. They're built bulletproof. Why not drive them?
Yeah, I know. Well, I think what he's talking about, though, is that you take that kind of upper end and then try to turn it into a pickup truck. And I guess that the upper end pickup truck people are having,
it's a mindset.
Yeah.
I think it's a mindset.
Yeah.
If you drive a Toyota, you're sensible, but they're very expensive. Toyotas are extremely expensive.
Oh, sure. I mean, these trucks aren't cheap. You're absolutely right. A high end half ton truck is easily $80,000. So, it's not about that.
Buy a used Mercedes-Benz for considerably less.
Yeah.
And, those Sprinters, for the most part, people who buy those turn them into nice RVs and things like that. I mean, outside of commercial users.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I'm familiar.
All right. Well, hey, good hearing from you, Scott, as always. It's Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters with me this morning. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Good morning, gentlemen. Jeff and Selma.
Hello, Jeff.
Hey, the Volkswagen guy that did the computer thing is my hero.
Okay, the one
I'm lost. What computer thing?
Yeah.
Well, with the emissions, the guy that got strung up for the guy that got sent to prison for doing the computer code that.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that guy is my hero.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, how clever do you have to be that your car doesn't meet emission criteria until you plug it into the computer that checks it to see whether or not it rearranges everything?
No, it was clever, but I think that the important point is that this is not something that came out of the blue. All the manufacturers manipulate software to perform to the test. That's just the nature of the game. They've been doing this for decades. It's never been a big deal. This was just an excuse to go after Volkswagen because Volkswagen at that time was the only car company that was selling mass market affordable diesels. Mercedes and BMW, Audi and other brands that were selling diesels. They were niche players, a handful of high-end cars. But you could pick up a brand new Jetta TDI in 2015 for about $22,000. And that was right around the same time that this EV push.
Volkswagen's reputation, it did for me. It made me want to go get one of those more than.
Oh, I agree. But, the point was they wanted to eliminate the point of comparison with the electric cars that they were beginning to really push hard. This is going back about 10 years.
Yeah.
And we have that unflattering comparison.
Yeah. And you have to remember, Jeff, is that the Volkswagen diesel scandal was essentially used to eliminate the diesel as an option here in the United States. So that was sad. Although, you're right. The guy may have programmed it to beat the test. But Eric is right about that. They've pretty much done them all that way, really.
Yeah. And, the cheating, it's just so ridiculous when you look into it. Not only did the cars pass the federal level certification tests, they also passed the state level tests, where they put the sniffer up your tailpipe and all of that. In order to discover this cheating, they actually had to put the cars in a lab and subject them to these incredibly rigorous sort of Inspector Javert type Inquisition. And then they found this tiny, tiny little difference that under wide open throttle, you know, it did produce more oxides of nitrogen than the standards allowed. That was the gist of the so-called cheating.
So we agree to a certain extent.
I love it.
They were brilliant, but at the same time, it was a very unfair takedown, and it was done for a political reason, which is why I have white hot hatred for the EPA over this this diesel scandal. Okay.
And then touching on the rates of acceleration, you know, it's why are we trying to make them accelerate better when the light turns green? Nobody moves anyway.
Hey, now that's a conversation for another day. Point well taken, Jeff.
Yep.
All right. Hey, Eric, hang on. We'll get right back to it. Because we have some other news, too. And what is about the four-door Mustang. All right. We'll talk more. We'll talk about more about that and also the Kia Seltos review and a bunch more. If you have a question or comment for Eric Peters, 770-KMED. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Bigfoot here. I'm the official spokesquatch for Bigfoot Guns and Ammo. Listen, when you're...
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Meyer Show.
A song that always made me drive faster in the 69 Cadillac in high school.
What is it, Bill? I can't hear it on my end.
Oh, you can't hear it? Oh, it's Paranoid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah, yep. Black Sabbath. Yeah. I didn't realize you couldn't hear that. I don't know. Maybe Zoom doesn't put the music across. But one way or the other, you know, that you're not paranoid if you think the cops in some cases may be wanting to give you some trouble. You had a story in there about, what was it, a fish and wildlife cop in Arizona that actually, I guess there were a couple of people, they drove through an open gate on a wildlife refuge, right? And then the cop...
it's unfortunately an all too familiar story about just an over-the-top reaction to a petty thing that got completely out of hand.
Yeah.
This guy and his friend, I guess they're in their truck, and this is in Arizona, and they come up to a gate, and apparently the gate is open, and the other side of the gate is some kind of a protected wildlife area. So they go through the gate, and there's a fish and wildlife cop there who, you know, tells them, you're not allowed here, you have to get out.
Okay.
They tell, and they do.
And they left. Yeah. Yeah.
So you'd think that would be the end of it, right? I mean, no harm, no foul. Okay, the gate was open. They went through it, but they didn't realize. It's sort of like trespassing. You have to be told you're not allowed to be here before they can trespass you. Anyway, so they leave. But this guy, this cop, follows them apparently for, you know, 20 minutes to where they pull into a gas station. And so the guy gets out and goes inside the gas station, gets some sodas, comes back. He's pumping gas into his truck. And this cop starts badgering and berating him, so threatening to arrest him and demanding ID. And the guy says, well, like, what did I do? What's the crime? And the thing rapidly escalates. And this cop is just hassling him. And of course, he does a dumb thing and calls him a bad name. The cop pulls a taser out. And this is at a gas station, gas pump.
A gas pump.
And deploys this high voltage device, you know, that has sparks. And of course, the guy lights on fire. So this poor guy now, he's rolling on the ground. He's on fire. He ends up suffering pretty serious burns to his forearms and hands. The cop disappears. This guy goes to the hospital and he spends 5 hours there getting treated. Probably he's going to end up with tens of thousands of dollars worth of medical bills. And, you know, you're just left wondering, well, how did this even happen? And it's all about this. You know, the cop, he had his authority affronted, apparently, you know, and maybe the steroids blinded his
well,
judgment.
Yeah, well, he was essentially guilty of of contempt of cop is really what it was. Well,
that's it.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, these over the top escalatory tactics, this business of treating people that way over absurdly trivial things. You know, I understand it. You know, if you're a cop, you might not like it if somebody, you know, talks back and questions you. But come on. I mean, this guy was not a criminal. There was no threat to his safety. He wasn't being charged. You know, like the guy wasn't rushing him with a weapon in hand or anything. And if you think that justifies you know, deploying a taser or shooting somebody, I mean, what country is this? What have we become as a country that this sort of thing happens all the time now?
In my opinion, and I have a number of law enforcement people in my family here locally, and so I see both sides of this. I really do. And what I find interesting is that I've detected there seem to be two types of police officers. There are truly police officers who are like truly the protect and serve type, you know, just heart of a servant. I've known them helping homeless people and people going getting treatment and things like that. I've known about them doing this and they go, yeah, that's great. That's really wonderful, right? And then I think there's another subsection of the police world, too, in which these were the guys or the women that were picked on in middle school and got their lunch money taken from them and all the rest of it. And I'm going to get a gun and a badge and a taser, and I'm going to get even for everything that was done to me back then. I've got the power. I think there's two types, I think. I really do.
Yeah, and also I think it was a really bad idea to encourage a lot of guys who served in Iraq and Afghanistan in combat. They came back and, oh, let's make them into cops. Bad idea. A lot of these guys are PTSD. And it's one thing to fight an enemy in combat, but we're not in combat. And, you know, America's streets are not a combat zone.
And certainly patrolling the wildlife refuge in Arizona is not a combat zone.
Yeah, and again, I'm in sympathy with you. Like, I get it. Like, if somebody actually is a threat, I'm on the cop's side.
Yeah.
That doesn't buy, you know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a guy who hasn't done a thing to justify that sort of extreme response. You and I remember when we were kids, you could talk to a cop, you know, about a traffic ticket. They wouldn't like resort to these, get on the ground now, you know, drawing tasers on you and all this stuff. It's really bad news what's happened, the attitude and the paranoia that's been instilled in a lot of cops to consider us some kind of like, I don't know, like whatever, like we're enemy combatants or something, and they're in the military. And I don't like it when they refer to us as civilians, because you know what? They are too. They're not in the military. You know, this isn't a war. And I think another part of the problem is that they dress these guys up like operators. You know, they've got their gear on, their Batman outfits with all this stuff on it. You dress like Batman, you're probably going to want to try to act like Batman.
Yeah, the uniform form, function follows the form, I guess, right? That kind of thing.
Sure. Mm. It just, we need to calm down. You know, this whole situation has kicked up to a point where ordinary people like us, you know, we look in the rearview mirror and we see a cop car, and how do we feel? We're worried, aren't we?
We're nervous.
That's bad.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to feel that way, and yet we do. Mm.
At least a free people shouldn't feel so nervous, you know, about something like that. It was interesting because I joined in on the, you know, in the commentary, and I know you did too, you know, on this. There's a lot of comments on this particular story, and some people were saying, well, nobody should have to kneel for everything, or and other civil libertarian lawyers are going to say, hey, the thing is, you want to survive the encounter, right? And
yes.
I appreciate that stuff. You can always argue about things later. And I couldn't help but what you and I have talked about is that the trucks look angry, the cars look angry,
yes,
the people look angry. The cops look angry sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's angry.
Yeah.
And I get it. I understand why. You know, we live in an environment now, it's so strange that we're getting used to this, where there's a crisis every day, where you just sort of expect when you get up in the morning, you want to look in the news and see what awful thing has happened. You know, what horrible, oppressive thing is going to beset you today. After a while, cumulatively, that kicks up the stress meter to the point where you're in a state of just constant siege and anxiety. And so when somebody cuts you off in traffic, your reaction is just to explode, you know, and it's bad news for all of us.
You know, it's funny you bring this up. I mentioned this the other day, Eric, and I was coming back from a transmitter site Saturday, 103 degree day or whatever it was. And I had a blowout because I had a slice on the sidewall from, mm-hmm. I guess, you know, the, you know, going up and down the forest road to get there. And I'm on I-5 coming back to town, and my tire was deflating, right? Rear tire on the 4Runner was deflating. And I didn't realize it at that time. I noticed it was starting to handle a little bit funny, but I thought it was a little bit windy, right? And so there's this guy from California passes me, and he's like pointing at me with the nastiest look on his face and going, da-da-da-da-da-da, and he's pointing at the vehicle. And I'm thinking, did I cut him off or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, he was trying to tell me that the tire was going flat, but he was using the face that looked like he was going to be a road rager sort of thing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's America right now. Everything yep. looks like road rage. So I was just kind of like saying, I'm just going to slow down here and just avoid you. I'm not going to get any conflict. You go ahead and keep going.
Yeah, that's a smart thing to do. And, you know, as you were saying earlier, you know, dealing with cops, even if it's a totally unjustified situation and you feel and you know that, well, this is wrong, I shouldn't have to deal with this, maintain your tones. Don't call the guy names.
Yep.
Just, you know, do what you're legally obliged to do. And if you have to, you know, proceed later in court, not on the side of the road. You know, it's not going to end well. He's got the gun. He's got the badge. And you don't want to get shot or tasered over some stupid traffic offense.
Not worth it. Just not worth it, okay? Talking with Eric Peters this morning, EP Autos, and happy to take your calls. And we'll head to the calls here right now. Good morning, KMED. Who's this? Hi.
Good morning, you guys. This is Vicky from the Apple.
Hi, Vicky. Question or comment? Go ahead.
Just a comment. You know, I totally agree with you, Bill. Back in the day, we used to, you know, the police were there to help you. They were very, like, engaging with the kids and the people. And I remember the first cop, the first woman cop in Central Point. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. She, I don't know if she was trying to prove something. I don't know what her problem was.
Oh, she was on roids, right? or acted
and
that way. But
she pulled my husband over one time because our trip permit fell out of the window. And she wouldn't even give us time. She made this huge scene in front of, you know, people that were standing out in their yards and stuff. Just trying to, like, humiliate us. And so we found the trip permit, and my husband's non-confrontational. Never been confrontational. And I said, no, we're taking this to the Central Point Police Department, and we're proving that you had insurance. We're not paying this, you know, huge fine or whatever for expired trip permit. Well, she would stop my husband every time for no reason at all. And we finally had to, like, talk to her supervisor and say, look, I don't know what this lady's problem is, but, and then she was warned, do not stop this man. And then later I found out, oh my God, she was like bringing up her own charges on people, like arresting people for domestic violence and drunk driving and all this stuff. And none of it was true. And she got booted out of there.
Man.
So nowadays it's like you once in a while you'll find a good cop, but a lot of them have chips on their shoulders. They're having personal problems and they take it out, like Eric was saying. So it's sad that you can't rely on the police as much as we used to.
All right. I appreciate the call there.
There's an easy fix to this. Just hold them responsible when they misbehave, as we would be. In fact, you know, I'm a big believer in that, in the idea that they should be held to a higher standard, because after all, they have been given this higher level of authority and they have the ability to abuse that. And when it's abused, there should be severe consequences. It shouldn't be, oh, you know, you get unpaid vacation for 5 days or something like that. If it's something that would be a criminal offense for you or I to do it, it should be a criminal offense for them to do it. And the punishment should be even more serious, in my opinion.
And to me, that has always been the focus. There should not be two tiers of law enforcement, one for the law enforcer, the law enforcers, and the others for the people who they enforce the law against. I agree with you on that. Let me go to next call here. KMED, you are on with Eric Peters. Good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Bill, it's Scott. Hey, I just wanted to say real quick. I know I'm double dipping here today.
Well, then make it quick here, okay?
Okay, hey, right rear. The two most tires that are worst to go out are your left and your right rear. Right. Absolutely the worst. I had it happen out in the desert in the Mercedes-Benz while I'm wearing racing Pirellis. So anyway, I want to say that seems almost like conspiracy that you had your right rear and I had my right rear go out. Oh. But it's not conspiracy theory, you know, what, Tuesday? Or whatever. Okay, the other thing is I agree with Eric, especially women. When women have a badge on, they're powerful. So anyway, I just wanted to say that.
All right. Point well taken.
I love women too.
Okay. I love women too, but we don't want people. We don't want anybody who is power hungry in the forces, as far as I'm concerned. You know,
I offer up one thing, one comment, Bill?
Sure.
I think probably there's an inherent problem. I know this is going to get me in trouble with women being police officers because they're physically small as a rule. You know, even the ones that get bulky. And that means that they can't deal with men as equals physically. And that puts them at a disadvantage. And I think that means that they are probably in their own minds much more likely to resort to a taser or a gun than a man would be, in my opinion.
Well, statistics actually borne that out, I believe, in which the gun or the taser, you go to that more quickly because, well, let's face it, you know, there are exceptions. I know that there is a Oregon State police officer, a female officer, tall Amazon. Man, I'll tell you.
Sure.
She'd take just about anybody.
That's the exception to the rule.
But that is the exception to the rule. Yes.
I mean, a reasonably strong man can easily overpower an average woman. That's just a fact of life. And it's something that we're supposed to not to notice. Doesn't make it any less true.
And that would color encounters, I would think, too. Now, then, before we take off here, The Kia Seltos 2027. Mm-hmm. You reviewed that this week, and what did you think? And pluses, minuses, and as far as
I thought a lot about it.
Yeah.
A lot about it. You know, Kia is trying to address the affordability issue, I think, and they're doing a really good job of it. This is a really nice vehicle, and it's an affordable vehicle. It starts around $26,000, and what they've done basically is to create sort of a smaller version of their very popular Telluride, which is a three-row mid-sized crossover SUV. This is two rows smaller. But extremely nice. If you look at the equipment that you get for the money and what you can get in it optionally, it's astounding how nice it is. And I encourage anybody who's looking for a nice car that isn't an El Cheapo special car to look at this thing. It's really, really impressive what they've done. The whole company, you know, I'm not plugging it. They're not giving me a check to say this. I really like what Kia is doing stylistically and functionally with their vehicles.
And what does this go for?
As I said, a sticker price on it is, I think, about $25,000 to start.
That's pretty good. Okay.
Yeah, that's really good.
I never thought we'd get to the day when I'd say a $25,000 car sticker price was good, but, you know, that's where we are.
Well, in this economy, and again, it's not an El Cheapo special. That's, I think, the take-home point. It's not like a consolation prize, and you look at it, oh, God, this is the best I can get. This is actually a genuinely nice vehicle. It's not just with the qualifier for the money.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you, though, has Kia and Hyundai, you know, they were sharing the engines, and there were some engine problems there for a few years. Has that been taken care of finally?
This is one of those things where only time will tell, right? You know, you have to get the miles and years on these things. And what we're talking about, I think, if we're on the same page here, was issues with their direct injected engines that were having carbon fouling. Pretty much all the manufacturers have added a dedicated port fuel injection circuit to these systems to spray some gas on the back of the intake valves, which is what you used to get with a PFI only system, to keep the carbon from building up on the back of the valves. And that supposedly has fixed the problem.
Okay, well, that's good. So a thumbs up on the Kia Seltos. Good to know.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
I really appreciate that, Eric. And you have a great week, and we'll keep up on epautos.com. And I guess the four-door Mustang, maybe we'll pick that up next week, that article, okay?
All right. Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. Take care. epautos.com. Eric Peters.